Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, our theme is sustainability for our region and for the world, and my very special guest today is Jim Bell. Jim is a brilliant and world-famous ecological designer who talks about creating life-sustaining and supporting systems for the future. Jim has been a speaker at UCSD, San Diego State University, as well as worldwide symposiums, including recently. He was featured in a video presentation in a conference put on by the Chinese government about how to reduce CO2 emissions. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Jim, I understand that you recently spoke at a World War CO2 event in San Diego in early March. Tell us what that was all about.
Yeah, there was a locally organized event to basically people having the feeling that, you know, the best thing we can do is figure out ways that we can get the things we need and want without producing CO2, like becoming renewable energy self-sufficient.
And why is that so important? You're an expert on this. Can you give our readers just a couple of the facts on where we are on all this?
Well, there's been a lot of scientists that have studied this, and I would say the vast majority are convinced that humans are contributing to global warming or climate change in one level or another. One thing that, you know, we've seen recently, that one of the senators hold up a snowball and saying, oh, this proves, in effect, global warming isn't happening because we have this big winter. That's because people misunderstand what the whole problem is, because as we capture more energy from the sun and keep it longer in our planet's atmosphere, it basically puts more energy in the weather system. So you can have hotter conditions, but you can also have colder conditions and stronger blizzards and stronger hurricanes and everything else. So it's not as simple as most people think.
Right. It's really extremes of climate at both ends of the spectrum, heat and cold. Now, coming up, I understand you're working on printing out 20,000 copies of a pamphlet.
Yes. It's the name, it has a kind of a long name, but the main part of it is consciousness and knowledge. And what I was looking at is anybody who's paying attention sees we're doing a lot of horrible things to our life support system. Heating up the climate is just one of the many, many things. I mean, we produce somewhere around 1,000 new chemical compounds every year that get added to our common environment.
Very true. When we talk about sustainability, so often the discussion goes off on climate change, which is certainly important, but there is a lot more, like chemical pollution and overpumping of groundwater and all these other issues, food sustainability. The pamphlet, as you mentioned, is called Consciousness and Knowledge, Achieving Peace, Prosperity, and Life Support Sustainability. It is published by the Ecological Life Systems Institute and Heartland Coalition Publication. Full disclosure, Heartland Coalition is also the parent organization behind East County Magazine. They're our publisher, although East County Magazine was not involved specifically in this particular pamphlet. So, Jim, tell us about where these are going to be distributed and what you hope to accomplish with it.
Well, 20,000 are going to be printed, 10,000 in Spanish, and the translation is almost complete, so we're just about ready to go to press. And then we have a budget where we're going to be distributing them on both sides of the border, mostly in Southern California and the Tijuana equivalent of the Tijuana part of the region.
So it's all about your ideas for creating a sustainable future for the cross-border region, San Diego and Tijuana?
Yeah, and it's for the world, too, because it's basically saying that, okay, if you really look at what's going on and you care about the future, you care about your grandchildren, you care about future generations, which I do, I ask my question, to live the modern world, what do we need to do in order to bring human activity into harmony with our planet's life support system?
Well, those are big ideas, Jim. Let's talk about some specifics of how you would go about doing this. I understand one of them is a plan for our region to become water self-sufficient, which is a huge issue in the middle of our fourth year of drought here with NASA. The latest scientific findings are that we could run out of water in our state in as little as a year.
Well, let me start by talking a little bit about energy, because that relates to water.
Okay.
And what I figured out is that current technology, off-the-shelf, commercially available PV panels, if we covered 43% of our roads and parking lots with those PV PV panels.
Solar, PV solar.
PV, yeah, PV photovoltaic, people call them, mm-hmm. panels, that we could be completely renewable energy self-sufficient.
And I understand you've done a study of just how many rooftops we have in San Diego. For those who might be skeptical about this, what did you find?
There still is really no hard data yet. I got some from the city and so forth, but I kind of looked at it from the perspective of I picked 1,000 square feet of roof and parking lot per capita, so this is man, woman, and child for our whole population. Mm-hmm. Then I also figured out, well, what if we increased efficiency by 40%? Then we're down to 26% coverage, so from 43% coverage to 26% coverage. And it turns out in both cases that we probably have enough space just in parking lots.
Interesting. So we don't even have to do roofs if we don't
want
to.
We may not have to do roofs or a little bit because there's been a study by a local mm-hmm. parking expert who said there's between 4 and 6 parking spaces per car.
And that would make us totally energy self-sustainable. In other words, we wouldn't need, say, a Sunrise Power Link pumping in power from somewhere else or a nuclear power plant such as San Onofre that was just closed down.
Right. And the other thing about those plants, which most people don't consider, is that whenever we get energy from outside a region, even if it's generated with, you know, solar panels or something mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. when we pay our bill, all the money leaves our local economy.
Well, plus this is also much less environmentally destructive than some of the things we're seeing, like these humongous wind farms and desert solar projects, which, while they do produce renewable power, maybe arguably better than coal or nuclear or fossil fuel, it definitely has negative environmental impacts and impacts on the quality of life in those communities. So this plan seems like it would be much more sensible, put it all on parking lots and maybe some of it on roofs and we're done.
Yeah, because we've destroyed the environment, basically. What the human settlement has destroyed the natural environment yeah. to a great degree. And this is our chance to actually make our roofs and parking lots into something valuable. Plus, you get shaded parking, too, at the
yeah.
same time.
What about water?
Say we did the 40% efficiency and we only need 26% coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And 40% efficiency is a relatively easy thing to achieve if we really put our minds to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 50% is easy to achieve, and I wouldn't be the only, quote, expert who would say that. But if we add another, and this was, I didn't know what this is going to be, and I didn't even know about how much we needed to actually install to be electricity self-sufficient, much less renewable energy self-sufficient, because that includes electricity and liquid and gaseous fuels. And so that was the start, was to figure out, well, how much energy do we use? That's a hard number to find, too. But I found it in a graph that was put out by SDG&E showing a typical summer day energy curve. And I did use that as a base.
Okay. And how does that translate into water savings?
Okay. It's that you're electricity self-sufficient with 26%. You add another 4% and use that electricity to run reverse osmosis pumps to convert salt water into fresh water.
Interesting.
And I'm assuming straight from the ocean, and my numbers are based on the Poseidon project, which is up in Carlsbad, which they're trying to build. The difference is that we wouldn't take the water directly from a lagoon or from the ocean. We'd take the water from wells right next to the ocean.
Interesting.
So all the water that we'd be using would be sand filtered, so no fish eggs, no young fish or anything in it, and then that water goes into the reverse osmosis system. 4%, so now we're up to 30% coverage for energy and water,
okay.
And that would produce 838,000 acre-feet of water a year, and I'm actually using more conservative numbers than they're using at Poseidon in my calculations, and we only use a little over 600,000 acre-feet of water a year in the county now.
Very interesting. So, have you brought these ideas forward to the the city council or the board of supervisors?
I did bring them forward to the Metropolitan Water Board, their executive committee. Well, they were very appreciative and even complimented me that I was using current figures on how much water we actually use per capita and things like that. But nothing ever came out of it.
Hmm.
It's like people are so involved in putting Band-Aids on things, they never look at, well, what's the real, what really solves this problem?
Yeah. Now, another issue is food sustainability. You've got some really interesting ideas there. Tell us about that.
Well, if anybody who does a study of the agricultural soils in the region will find, even though we've done a lot of bad development and things like that on some good ones, there's still a lot. We have the soils. The holdback has always been the lack of water. You know, they were importing in as expensive.
As a side note, a lot of people don't know that San Diego County actually has more family farms under – more small farms of 10 acres or less than any county in America. Can you believe that? More
and
than in the Midwest.
One of the most organic farms, too.
But if we are running out of water, how do we do more agriculture?
Well, if we installed the reverse osmosis, okay, now we actually have over 200,000 acre-feet of water that we didn't have before.
Okay.
On top of what we normally use. And right now, agriculture basically uses the same water that we use, which is imported. Mm-hmm. But this allows us to use free solar energy to make the electricity to run the pumps and pump the water to the farms, wherever it needs to go.
There you go. And you have some ideas for urban agriculture, too. This, I understand your ideas wouldn't just be, you know, farms way out in the rural areas someplace. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, a lot of people have gardens, and that's definitely an excellent thing to do. And it's also, when you think about it, commute for the food is from your garden to your refrigerator or to your table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's obviously energy saving. I mean, organic agriculture is pretty good, and it's still a new emerging industry, and I'm 100% for it. But when you factor in the driving it from Washington, state of Washington down here or something like that, and refrigerated along the way, that starts to become a little questionable in terms of sustainability. You know, growing food anywhere you can locally is a good idea.
Now, Jim, you were also talking about creating a real free market economy for our region by adopting what you call true cost pricing and cradle-to-cradle pricing. Please explain for our listeners what that is.
You know, this kind of came up when I was writing my first book that came out in 1994, you know, because I was, you know, looking at the economy and it seemed like the free market system seemed to be pretty good. And I was asking the question, well, if it's so good, why does it cause all these environmental and health problems along the way? And then it dawned on me, well, those costs aren't included in the price we pay at the store.
Yeah.
You know, and so I said, well, how do you fix that? Well, I came up with this concept of true cost pricing, and there was actually some economists, you know, that you could find on the web and so forth, Robert Repetto, who talked full cost pricing, but not to the extent that I was talking about it. And then the cradle-to-cradle pricing, I don't know who came up with it first. Could have been an architect in New York. But my proposal is that we hire some firm, and I said, well, maybe somebody like Consumer Reports magazine could do this. They don't have a vested interest in anything. They pride themselves on it, and all they really have to do is add health and ecological costs to their calculations. And then they find out what things cost, and then they assign that extra money to the retail price.
Good point, because if we put out something that, for example, has harmful emissions down the road, you're going to have a societal cost. We're all going to be paying for hospitalizations for all those folks with asthma and other lung conditions.
Cancers, or, too.
Yeah, with something like a wind project. They say, well, you know, it's going to produce X number of megawatts of power, but we're not talking about how much power goes into the manufacturer. Some of these are actually made in coal-fired plants in China and then shipped around the world and so forth. So there's a lot of additional costs and environmental pollution in the production that really isn't talked about on those.
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons why I did solar. Like, you can have the same criticism for remote solar. Like, oh, let's put it out in the desert. There's nothing out there. Well, there's a whole bunch of life that lives out there.
Right.
It may be sparse, but what do you do when you put up a bunch of solar panels? Well, you scrape it and then you pave it with asphalt and then you put all these panels out there.
Well, yeah, and then also if it's in a remote area, then you need more power lines pumping at long distance. You lose something in the transmission, so it's not as efficient as if you build it where the power is needed. And, of course, you've got the environmental dangers, the fire dangers. Let's not forget what started some of those big fires in 2007. It was power lines.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier about the cash flow. It's like when we are producing energy remotely, however, and the shipping the result, the electricity or whatever to us, we create a negative, what I call a negative energy purchase cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
If we produce it locally, we have a positive energy purchase cash flow.
And what would all of this mean for jobs and our local economy if you were to wave your magic wand and could somehow enact all these policies right now or some future group of policymakers puts them into place?
Well, I did a conservative job estimate of it based on electricity, which I had more research on that. Electricity makes up about 40% of the energy we use. So I figured, okay, then if we'd produce 400,000 job years of employment just to become renewable electricity, to become completely renewable electricity, we'd be producing about a million or more job years of employment locally.
And that's not even counting agriculture and water.
No, this is just for the becoming energy self-sufficient and water self-sufficient.
Amazing. Now, your pamphlet that you're distributing also talks about world population being part of the problem. Tell us about that. That's a little bit of a controversial area sometimes, and how you would address that.
Yeah, it is controversial, and I was really kind of frightened when I was, trying to write it and articulate it. And what I realized is that, women can only do this, and they can only do this if they're free to choose to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, and if they're free to choose, and they choose to not have a limit per woman, but that women would average only 2 children during their reproductive cycle of their life. Some women would choose to have none, some would choose to have one, others would choose to have 2 or 3 or even more. Mm-hmm. The point is that you're trying to get that 2-child average. And if we got that, in 200 years, we'd be down to 2.7 billion people. That was the population in 1960.
And to put it in perspective, we're at, 7 billion people right
we're
now?
We're 7.3.
So this would cut that down to less than half.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A much more manageable population, especially if we're doing things along the lines of everything else I'm talking about.
Yeah, less pressure on our natural resources and everything
exactly.
else. Now, you've also talked about part of long-term sustainability is having plans for preparing for disasters. And you're not just talking about wildfires and earthquakes. It's on everyone's mind here in California, but some other things, too. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, what I looked at was what are the big ticket things that could happen to life on this planet? I don't know if anybody knows about this, but supposedly there's a super volcano that's predicted to erupt in Yellowstone Park.
I do know about that. You know, years ago, I toured a volcano observatory in Hawaii, of all places, and I interviewed a volcanologist, and he told me all about that, and I was just shocked. This thing could be massive. Maybe you have figures with you.
The timing, I think it was 625,000 years ago or something like that, and then it was 625,000 years before that. So we're at about the 600.
It's due, in other words.
Yeah,
and it has been rumbling. They've been having some earthquakes and things up there.
But it doesn't even require that. It's just like a swarm of volcanoes.
Yeah.
I mean,
what happens if that goes? How big an impact would that be all the way down here in California, for instance?
Well, the danger is that a lot of explosions on Earth, big ones, like would be caused by a volcano and the ash and everything else. Mm-hmm. We'd be throwing all this very fine dust and ash way up and above the normal atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that would block sunlight. And if there's enough of it up there and it covers enough of the planet, basically no winter or no summer, a year or it could be several years.
So how do we prepare for something like
that?
Which certainly has occurred, if you go back eons ago before people were on Earth, this certainly occurred. What can be done?
Well, those kinds of things, the only thing we can really do at this point, or because of scientific technology, doesn't allow us to do anything to ease the pressure on supervolcanoes or even volcanoes in general, but we can prepare. We can store food. We can store water. We can put together shelter. I mean, actually, I think it was Switzerland. They basically built a bomb shelter for the whole country.
Very interesting.
I mean, that's the idea that if you really care about the future, if you're not so involved in your own personal movie that you do see the future and you realize that these other people are going to be born and live, hopefully. And also, I look at it from the perspective that though each human family is finite, at least as far as we know, the human family's life is potentially infinite, but only if we live correctly on our planet with each other.
Well, those are very wise words, Jim. Now, on another note, you have been a past mayoral candidate yourself here in San Diego more than once, and I was wondering what your thoughts are about the current mayor and council's energy self-sufficiency plan by 2035, this plan that they've come up with.
Yeah, I'm not a real authority on it. I skimmed it. I was kind of looking for, some facts and figures, and I didn't find any. They're sort of dribbling out. But one thing I did notice is that the first thing it says, we're going to become renewable energy self-sufficient by 2035. But when you look at what they're talking about, it's really just becoming renewable electricity self-sufficient.
Not relying on the kind of things you're talking about. How would they get there?
A big part of it is going to be wind.
Yeah, which is very destructive in East County. There's huge opposition to that out here, destroying places like McCain Valley, for example. And we all saw what happened in Ocotillo, where they went right over Indian burial grounds and put these right next to people's homes and 500-foot-tall towers adjacent to Anzabarigo Desert State Park, destroying views and impacting desert bighorn sheep and other things.
This is a sore spot for you, I can tell.
East County, it is kind of a sore spot. What can listeners out there do if they want to try to get these politicians down in San Diego to adopt something closer to your plan rather than the current mayor's plan?
Even I'm not saying the plan has to be exactly like what I'm laying out. But I realize that it's going to have to be something like this in order to get us past this rough spot we're going through.
How do we get that conversation going? It's one thing to read a pamphlet and say, "Hey, that sounds like a good idea," but beyond that, what can folks do?
Well, right now, even though I've been doing this for about 40 years, this new strategy is kind of in its infancy. So the best thing is for them to do is to give me a call or email me.
Jim, Where can people reach you if they want to get in touch or they want to get more information?
The phone number is 619-758-9020. To get a copy of the Common Sense paper, you go to jimbell.com, and then on the left side of the page you'll see some little buttons. Click on the Consciousness and Knowledge button, and that'll bring the paper right up for you.
Very good. Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
My pleasure.